Told you at some point does the countdown. And welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. On Blog Talk Radio. Thank you. The Matthew Aaron Show.com is where you could find us. www.thematthewaronshow.com. At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, where you can join our close to 20,000 Twitter followers, give or take. Depends on their mood that day if they want to follow us or not. The Facebook fan page, of course, you go to Facebook, you go to the search bar. You type in the Matthew Aaron Show, you click enter, you hit like, and there you are, you're there, you're a fan, or whatever that is, following. Is that liking,
it's just
following?
That simple.
I don't know what it is.
I'm sorry, I have to get home. Excuse me.
Tim Conway already has to leave. What else do we got going on? Happy birthday to my sister Sarah, who listens to the show periodically.
How's your cousin?
Yeah, my cousins are good.
Good.
Yeah,
all
57
great.
Of them. We'll shout out to them throughout.
And the dog?
And the
okay.
Dogs are good.
Good.
Dogs
okay.
are good. Cats good.
I have to leave.
Tim still has to go. And then we're here at 603 North Hollywood Way, Taste Chicago, here in Burbank, California.
Uh-huh.
It is the 10th anniversary of this restaurant, coming up the weekend of the 11th. So the weekend of the 11th, you can come in, you can get a free free gift giveaway here at Taste Chicago. That's the weekend of the 11th. And you could check Living Social within the next few days. There's going to be a deal on Living Social, which is great. So
okay.
you're going to be able to come to Taste Chicago. And
what did she say the gift was?
She didn't.
Okay, it's like a tote bag?
It's a special
like a
free gift giveaway.
Yeah, uh-huh. like emblazoned over its entire surface with the color
that's
brown.
That's right.
There's a crowd that's gathered here already. So
no.
I don't know.
No,
are you out of tote bags? Or,
we're out of tote bags. We
okay.
gave them all away.
First 10,000 fans.
You know, we're here with Tim Conway, who of course, is a legend. And unfortunately, your book will not be out by October 11th, or we'd put that in the tote bag.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Your book, you want, you're not giving away any free though, so that's not going in a tote bag.
I could.
You could. Well, What's So Funny, My Hilarious Life, Tim Conway, that's the book. It comes out October 29th. You can order that on Amazon.com right now. Let's talk about the book right away. Let's go right into the book.
Well, first of all,
yeah.
it's not exactly a book. It's
okay.
a pamphlet. And it's only 3 pages, so it's not going to take you that long to read.
Is it $20 for 3 pages?
Yeah.
Ooh,
go
man.
Figure.
It's well, $6.50 a page.
This must be some incredible Cracker Jack material.
Oh, boy. Big pages, yeah.
Well, when you win as many Emmys as Tim Conway, you can sell 3 pages.
One
for
page $20. Per Emmy.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
Right. So explain to me why you chose now for the memoirs. Why now?
Well, my memory is going, and as long as I can remember, you should write things down when you remember it. And it's kind of a memoir, I guess, but it's well, the mystery of the fact is that it is actually purchased by a book company and being distributed.
Yeah,
these people are not bright. And they should be checked into. No, I just thought, I had an afternoon off one day, and I thought, well, why don't I write a book? So I did.
That's great.
I
you wrote
it
all
it.
In one afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. 3 pages, one afternoon, and a paycheck for Tim Conway. I mean, it's that easy.
There
from
you go. 5 to 7.
It's that easy. All right, you're writing the memoirs, and for instance, I know friends of yours throughout the last few years have put out memoirs like Dick Van Dyke has,
uh-huh.
And Carol Burnett, I know, has her memoirs that have come out as well.
Mm-hmm.
How many stories about that period of time in television do you tell in this book?
Four.
Four? Just four stories?
Yeah, the only four.
Are they all McHale's Navy stories, all four?
Well, two are duplicates, and the other two are in the same language, so it's a foreign language.
Esperanto.
I guess I kind of tell stories about how I got started in the business and why I'm still in the, if I ever was in the business, why I'm still in the business. But I started out in radio in
promotion. That's right, you were a radio major at Bowling Green State, correct?
Right, well that didn't help at all.
No.
If you ever go to somewhere and say, how many people went to Bowling Green? Nobody raises their hand. It's a nice, quiet evening. So I did take speech and dramatics in college, only because it was the easiest thing next to phys ed. I think I should have taken probably phys ed. But, so I went 4 years to Bowling Green State University, got a diploma, which has just jettisoned me to the top of, well, the top of this chair.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that's so you get the degree, you move out to L.A.? Is that how it worked?
No. I got the degree, and then I tried to look for a position in radio.
Okay.
The only one I could come up with was sitting. That was the only position that I could come up with. There was nobody hiring or anything. And then one of my high school buddies said, I'm quitting down at KYW in Cleveland, so why don't you go and take my job? And I said, what do you do? And he said, nothing. I said, I think I can handle that. So he said, I'm writing jokes for a morning disc jockey. And I said, I don't write jokes. He said, neither do I, but you get a, you buy a joke book, you copy a few, and hand them to him every day, and he seems to be satisfied with that. So
this is a cake job.
Yeah, right.
Good.
That and take care of his canary, which also sang. He played the piano a couple of tunes in the morning, and the bird sang.
Sang Mac the Knife along with him.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That was his favorite tune, as a matter of fact. And messed the bottom of the cage, and I cleaned it up.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Oh, boy. So that was the first job in show business, if
that
you will.
That was as close as I got to show business. Before I went into the Army, and I wanted to get that out of the way because I didn't want to go get a job and then have the Army call me up. So I went in the Army, actually hours. A lot of people will say, who's Army? I was in the United States Army for 2 years and 2 weeks. The 2 weeks, whenever you're court-martialed, they add that time on to the end of your tour. So I had 2 years and 2 weeks. Then after that, I guess a job did open up at KYW there, and I went down to work for a guy named Big Wilson, who is the morning disc jockey, and copied jokes out of joke books and gave them to him, and he said, "Boy, these are really clever." So
Tim Conway original.
Yes. So from there, I just kind of muddled from station to station, as you do when
right.
you're in the radio, as you know. You know when you're called in on a Friday that you're going to get Friday, you're going to get
fired.
So. So I was called in on a Friday one time, and I opened the door, and I said, I quit, before he had an opportunity to fire me. So I did. And then I worked kind of for another station in Cleveland, you know, as you do.
You bounce around.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
My gosh. Fortunately, there were six stations in Cleveland, so I hit most of them. And then Rosemarie from the Dick Van Dyke Show happened to be coming through Cleveland, and she heard some of the stuff that I was doing. By that time, I was working in television, WEWS, as a director with a talent, which was Ernie Anderson, who was the voice of all the commercials in Cleveland. And he had never been a personality, and I had never been a director in television. So you can imagine, people were actually watching the show to see it screw up. It was a mess every day. I could never get off at the end of the show at 10 o'clock with the end of the movie. So a lot of people would call and say, hey, you know, what happened here? Does Lassie come home?
How's the wonderful life end?
So... I figured that this might not be my calling, but I stayed with it and made a tremendous hit in the industry.
So at what point in time did you finally make it out to... Well, I got to ask. You said court-martialed. Were you joking?
Oh, no.
Okay,
no.
What were you court-martialed for? Is this in the book?
It's in the book, but you don't have to get the book to read it. I will tell you. Let me see. I was... You know, let me check with that, because I don't know whether they're still after me or not.
They're still after you.
Tim, you
know, Obama's going to come for Tim.
I was on guard duty one night, and the Army had given me a rifle, and they are really very particular about that. You know, they want you to hang on to it and clean it and do a lot of things in case we're ever attacked. We were never attacked in Georgia. That I know of, but I was on guard duty one night, and from 12 to 6, you just walk around and guard pool balls, and so I was about in 2 hours into my tour that night, and I decided to get in the back of a car and just kind of take a little nap. And in the meantime, the lieutenant was coming around to check and see if you're there. So he came to my post, and I looked at my watch, and I go, oh, my God. So I jumped out of the car, ran to my post, but I forgot my rifle. So I looked in the garbage there, and there was a long neon tube light there. And so I took that out, and I came around the corner, and I pointed it at the lieutenant, and I said, halt, advance and be recognized. And he started to give me his name, rank, and serial number, and he looked at this light, and he said, what is that? I said, this is a light bulb, and if you come any closer, I'll turn it on. Now, fortunately, he didn't have a sense of humor. So I went to 2 weeks of painting
rocks. That's so funny, because that sounds just like
a
gag you would see with Tim Conway.
Oh, yeah.
That's the court martial story. Not like, Tim, you messed up the Gulf of Tonkin incident for us. That was not good.
So at what point was the big break then in Hollywood?
I came out here Rosemarie from the Dick Van Dyke Show saw me and said, come on out here and do Steve Allen. And so she came out here and
that
said...
That simple. She goes, come out and we're going to get you on Steve Allen.
Right. And she knew Steve real well. And she said, you know, there's a funny kid in Cleveland. He doesn't know much about what he's doing, but he's hysterical. So I came out and I did... I would come out and talk to Steve, and he would say, you know, we never knew what we were going to do. He would say, oh, I understand that you're a bullfighter, and I would pick it up there, and he would interview me as a bullfighter. So I did that for about 3 weeks, and then I decided to go back to Cleveland. I really wasn't interested in performing in the show business.
The late-night talk shows, they don't make stars anymore.
No.
They don't bring people on anymore and create stars.
No.
But Johnny used to do it, Carson and Steve Allen. And
I think I
Jack
put it into that.
Yeah, you were the last one.
Last one.
That's when the networks were like, only stars from now on. No.
And actually, I didn't become a star. I just was very close, though.
Yes.
Then I went back to Cleveland, and Rosemarie said, I've been talking to Steve Allen, and I think that you would find a home on his late-night show, because he was on late night at the time. By that time, I came out to Los Angeles, and Steve had decided to go on once a week on Sunday, which was a good move, because he was canceled in 4 weeks. So... most of the shows that I was ever on were canceled. Some were canceled while I was on, and others, they waited at least until the end of the day. But a guy from the producer of McHale's Navy said, you know, you were stupid enough to be this dumb guy on McHale's Navy. So why don't you come on and be Ensign Pulver? And I said, okay, you know, I'm not doing anything else, so... I did that, and zippity-doo. Here I am eating hamburgers at Watson.
Hot dogs at Chicago. But hamburgers at Watson's, too. You know, you worked with Ernest Borgnine on that show on McHale's Navy. And Ernest unfortunately passed away this year. But,
that's right.
What was your relationship like with Ernest?
Terrific. He was a big teddy bear.
Yeah.
You know, everybody said, if he ever gets mad at you, you know, but I never gave him a reason to because I had heard so many stories. But, he was the kindest, gentlest personality I had ever met. He didn't mind if you did something. You know, he wasn't threatened by anybody in show business. And so you got to do what you did, and anything on McHale's Navy was okay with him. And that was a very successful show for about 4 years.
Yeah.
And after that, I just kind of wandered around.
Yeah, you wandered around, but you had shows here and there. But, I mean, I think, wouldn't you say, like, for you, Carol Burnett's show, that was
that was it.
That was the show,
was
right?
Yeah. Most of the 11 years, I was either a guest or a regular on the show.
Yeah.
After 3 years, she said, why don't you be a regular on this show? And I said, well, I'm doing... In those days, you used to do 33 shows, and I was doing pretty close to 33. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'll do 32 shows, and give me a week off. And during that week, I'll be a guest on your show. So actually, I ended up doing 33 shows here.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
What happened to television? What's different about television now and then?
Well, better or worse?
I think the language, for one thing, has ruined it for a lot of people. I mean, you can't sit and watch with your kids anymore because they're going to ask questions as to what did that guy say and what does he mean by that, and then you're stuck. So I think that the language barrier being lifted by television was a big step in the wrong direction. It's no longer a family situation, because that used to be the place where a family would gather, and sometimes you never talked to your parents, and only but during that show, you
right.
know, or talked about the show afterwards. So that and the fact that it doesn't have the quality it seemed to have.
Yeah, I mean, even the comedy, you watch some of these sitcoms, and they're not as funny as the old sitcoms.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the truth.
Well, I sit there sometimes and watch a half-hour show or an hour show, and the laughter coming from the television set is hysterical,
you know.
I'm sitting there staring at these people, wondering, what are you laughing at, you know? And I sound like an old codger, which I am, but it's true. You know, people just, the programming is not as funny as it used to be.
So when you're watching a show with the family nowadays, what show is it? Is there anything you guys watch that you find to be really funny and suitable for a whole family?
Well, it all has to have you in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, I can't find a family that allow me to watch it with them.
But if you were to.
If you knocked on a door, said, hi, I'm Tim Conn, can we watch TV?
Yeah. I would, I don't know what I would watch. I guess, I don't know what I would actually sit down and
say. Did you and your family watch Yes, Dear when you were on Yes,
Dear?
Oh, yeah. Because that's a show that was pretty innocent.
Yes.
There was really nothing on Yes, Dear that was offensive at all.
Right.
That's honestly, when I think about it, that's honestly true. Another great comedian was on Yes, Dear, who I know you know well, is Jerry Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys did Coach together as well. You did an episode of Coach, right? Mm-hmm. You won an Emmy for it, I believe, correct?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
What's it like working with Jerry Van Dyke? He's a blast, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
He's a crazy guy. Well, anybody in the business is crazy, you know, and should be locked up. And but... since they're contributing once a year to the income tax and everything, they let people work. Jerry was, also with Dick. I worked a lot with Dick Van Dyke, too. Yeah, and it just doesn't seem to have the magnetism that it had in those days with the personalities. For whatever it's worth, Milton Berle and people like that sure. They were genuinely funny.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, they were. They made fools of themselves. They weren't afraid to take a pie in the face, and they weren't afraid to, not that that's that funny because I've lost many a suits on that one, but they weren't afraid to make fools of themselves, you know. And the language wasn't involved in it, you know, the off-color language that I'm speaking of. They just were hysterical.
Yeah. I think it sort of has to do with there's so much content and everything is sort of broken down into being for a specific group of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's all specialized, whereas in those days everything was made with the mindset that it could be enjoyed by everybody.
Right.
Johnny would make references to things that kids wouldn't understand, like
yeah.
drugs and all that, but that's all they were references.
Mm-hmm.
I think that targeting, you know, different groups and making things for different groups is another thing that changed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep, right.
I think that's true. What I wanted to ask you was, I know Bill Cosby used to say this about the language too, but with stand-up comedy, what are your thoughts on that? Is that a different realm?
I think, you know, the same thing has happened there too.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a club and you want to sit there and hear some funny stuff, and the next thing you know, some wise guy comes out and lays 15 minutes of bad language on you before the real person comes out, you know.
Yeah.
So it, a lot of times it's the surrounding people or the club itself or the personality themselves who are doing it, you know. I guess they think that that's the only way. It can, because it's shock value, you can shock an audience into laughing. If you come out and say a few things, I could shock you on the air right now
yeah.
with a couple of things. But it just, it's not worth it. To me, it's not worth it. It's much better and it's a lot harder to make people laugh, I think, in restricting yourself.
Yeah. So like a show like Howard Stern's, that's
yeah.
not for you.
Well, no, I like Howard.
You do like Howard?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's, first of all, he's very clever
yes.
in what he does
yes.
and what he says. And, yes, a lot of times that he does go a little off.
Bottom drawer.
The rails.
Yeah.
yeah. But, no, I do.
You do like him.
Oh, I've listened to him ever
since
I came
out here. He's a great interviewer, and he does
yeah.
do great bits.
Yes.
He does do great bits. I will say the one thing with Howard that gets old, for me at least, that I always turn off, is whenever he has the porn stars on or whatever. I'll
yeah.
turn it off, because it's just the same gag that he's done a million times.
Yeah.
yeah.
But when they do bits on the street and, like, bits in the studio, they're usually very funny.
He's very
yeah.
fast and
yeah.
Very clever.
Have you done an interview with him?
You know, I don't think I've ever been on his show, but I do listen to him daily.
Yeah.
I've listened to him from the first day he was on. I thought he was very, very clever, and he's been a constant since I've been out here.
Who's your favorite host ever? That you've worked with, Steve Allen. Steve Allen.
Steve, yeah.
Is it because it brings the most like memories for you? And
well, Steve was the kind of guy that once you got him chuckling, he would break into that stupid laughter
yeah.
he had,
yeah.
and that cackle.
He did,
and you knew that you were being, first of all, very funny to hear that cackle because he was genuinely.
He did have a one of a kind laugh.
Oh
yes.
yeah. Yeah.
Very no baritone, question. But
yeah.
yeah, yeah, it was very good. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah and he thought funny, too.
Yeah.
He, I did a show with him one time out at, we were out at SeaWorld, and they wanted me to dive in a tank with a porpoise. And so I said, well, are they dangerous? The guy said, no.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So he threw a fish into the porpoise, and the porpoise kind of chewed on it like it was, a human leg. And I said, you know, are you sure they're not dangerous? He said, no. He said, although if you disturb them, they will come at you maybe like 45, 50 miles an hour and ram you. And I
that
said,
doesn't sound dangerous
that,
at all.
No, no. So I could hardly wait to get in the water. And he said, if you see him coming towards you at that speed, try to get out of the pool. Okay, fine. But when you're doing things in show business, you do stupid things that the guy says, take this horse and you want to jump from this yeah. cliff to the other cliff with yeah. this horse? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think the horse can do it? Well, we don't know. He's never done it, but you go ahead.
So what says
I feel yeah. like that kind of comedy's missing from television now, too, though. That's yeah. what I'm talking about. I feel like that's kind of missing is you made a career off of being the guy that was – it was okay to laugh at yourself.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, you would say, wouldn't you
well,
say
nobody else was.
Most of your but most of your great roles and most of the great bits you did on Late Night were about, I'm Tim Conway, I'm about to do something stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And they, most of the
I
time
haven't thought
was,
this through.
The camera crew, the camera crew would thought it would be funny
right.
if they set dogs on me.
Tim just did whatever he thought was going to make people laugh.
Yeah,
and
that's
at the
true.
Expense of yourself,
oh,
they
yeah.
don't do that anymore.
No, no.
no.
There's a reason for that. Because yeah. most of those people are dead.
Right. Well, I was going to say, guys, very similar to you. Once again, going back to Jerry Van Dyke. Jerry yeah. was the type of actor and comedian that would do whatever it took to get a laugh
yeah.
out of you.
Right.
Even if it included, and most of the time it did, making him the butt of the joke.
Right.
And that kind of comedy is sorely missing today.
Right.
I can't
Absolutely.
Think of, like, if you think of today's guy who does that, who is that?
No.
Well,
nobody wants
to it's more
here.
It's
yeah.
more aggressive, it's more confrontational, and
yeah.
you can get humor out of that, too.
No, sure, sure, but I'm saying who's the guy nowadays that you go to for the butt of their own joke? They're the butt of their own joke.
It used to be Evel Knievel. He wasn't doing it for a joke,
yeah.
but I mean, that man,
yeah.
I mean, he was nuts.
Yeah, he was insane.
Yeah.
He was insane, but I mean, you think about how popular the Dorf series is, though, that you did. The
yeah.
Dorf series, incredibly popular, and it's about, you play this character, Dorf, and basically it's about laughing at Tim.
He's
right. yeah.
like a clown,
yeah.
like a Chaplin-esque, he
right.
can't do anything right.
And I'm just
right.
saying, who's that guy nowadays? You're the comedian expert. You're the comedy expert. Who's that guy?
I don't know of anybody.
Yeah, you guys don't know either, huh?
No.
Neither do I. I mean, for a while, I thought maybe it was going
to
be like Roberto Benigni or something,
yeah.
but
yeah.
then he kind of faded
yeah.
out, and
yeah,
Jim Carrey could
Jim
have Carrey, been.
Steve
yeah.
Martin. And
Steve Martin's very good
yeah.
at that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
true,
and,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Jerry Lewis was
Jerry Lewis.
The last of the stick your head in a meat cleaver. And,
are you friends with Jerry? Is he a friend of yours?
I know him,
yeah.
But, you know, I
All
don't.
All good experiences with Jerry,
oh, yeah.
though.
Yeah.
Yeah, he enjoyed his
yeah.
work and everything.
I don't think I've ever had a bad experience with anybody in the business. You know,
no, that's great.
Really?
Yeah.
You're the only one.
What would they say?
Congratulations.
Yeah. I almost got into it with, strange as it may seem, Kate Smith.
yes.
She was
oh, wow.
Strange.
She was standing on what they had made like a mountain in the middle of the stage, and she was
like one of those stage mountains.
Yeah,
yeah,
singing
yeah.
"God Bless America."
Okay.
And before she started singing, she actually crossed herself. You know,
yeah,
made the sign of the cross. And I said, "I hope you make the basket." And for some reason, that's
good.
Yeah,
that turned her a little sideways, and I thought she was going to kill me.
That's good, though. I like
yeah.
that. You know, I wanted to talk about more about the Carol Burnett Show here, too.
Yeah.
The Carol Burnett Show was just so important. Just
mm-hmm.
First of all, for what Carol did for female comedians,
uh-huh.
but for as funny as the show was, too.
Right.
Was there, how much did you include into the Carol Burnett Show sketch-wise? Like, were you coming up with ideas and stuff, or were you basically just doing what they wanted you to do?
A lot of times I would write a sketch, and, you know, they were always willing to try it.
Yeah.
So Yeah, but no, they had some pretty sensational writers on that. They understood what the people who were going to do the Burnett Show were all about, and including Carol.
Yeah.
That you give them an outline and they will fill it in, you know.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily that you sit in here until somebody comes up with a funny line. There were funny situations and things that they created that led you. Well, I used to keep a lot of stuff away from Harvey until we actually did it. And we were doing a thing one time where I was a dentist. And I was going to stick myself with the Novocaine needle and eventually immobilize myself. My first, my arm, my leg, my head, you know. And
while you're working on a patient?
While I'm working on the patient. So I never told Harvey about the Novocaine part of it. So he said, you know, this sketch stinks.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't make any sense. It's like you're filling my tooth, you know. I said, well, I got a couple of things. But you know, he said, well, it's never going to work. Well, when he was sitting there watching me do it, all of this stuff, he actually wet his pants. So I think that was living proof.
Oh, it's great.
So when you were coming up with sketches, you started with an idea. You started with, or there'd be a tagline that you're trying to, how do we get to this line in this situation?
It mostly started with a situation, and what can you build around it that would be funny, and... yeah, but as far as writing a joke for a joke, the Bob Hope theory of writing a joke was not in my makeup.
Yeah.
It was more of a funny situation or something that...
you were always great with situations, and you're always great with... Another thing you're always great with is physical comedy, and I think that kind of lends to the situational comedy, too.
Right.
You would do a lot on the Carol Burnett Show. Like, Tim would get so many laughs without doing anything, like without saying a word. You wouldn't say anything,
right.
But it was in the expressions and in the movements. And So was physical comedy a gift you always had, or was that something you learned as you went along?
I'm dyslexic, so I read things into sentences that are never there. And every time I got up in class to read, it would always be hysterical because I was reading things into sentences that were never even thought of in that in those sentences, and I enjoyed the kids laughing at me. I didn't object to it, and I used, since I was a small kid, I weighed 97 pounds when I played football in high school, and the coach made me a guard, which was a pretty bright move. Yeah, so there was a lot of people I would look at.
How tall were you at 197?
About 5'2".
Woo! It's that Ohio food.
Yeah. I would look at the guys that I was playing against that night and say to myself, oh my, this is going to be a painful evening. But I was like a rat, you know. They couldn't find me because I would go through their legs or around and... rather quickly, and so I was in the backfield before they knew where I was. And I guess I use that as part of the strength of whatever I was doing, you know.
I'm getting people writing in. They want you to recount the elephant story.
Oh. Well, the director, Joe Hamilton, who was Carol Burnett's first husband, second husband, came out of the booth and he said, you know, we're a little long on this show. So we were playing a game where it was a one-word answer that Carol was playing. And so he said, when Carol gives you the clue, just say elephant and shut up and sit down. So she gave me the question and I said... you know, elephants remind me of that elephants. And I went into the story about these Siamese elephants that were joined at the trunk. And so they couldn't go, like the other elephants. They could just go, nork. And I went into a whole thing about a guy, the trainer had a monkey that would come out and dance on their trunks because they were connected to the trunks. And it just went on and on and on and on. And I could look back I would look back into the booth and see these guys going, oh, for God's sake, what is he doing? So, actually, Vicky had the funniest, I can't say it on the air, but the funniest
Vicky
line.
Lewis?
Vicky Lawrence.
Oh, Vicky Lawrence, yeah, Vicky Lewis is news radio.
I got through with the whole thing, and Carol said, go on, Mama. And she said, are you sure that little a-hole's through? And, so that ended that.
Well, when you did stuff like that on the Carol Burnett show, though, was there really anyone that upset about it after it's so funny and it airs? And
No.
Afterwards,
no.
Everyone
played
just part
it
of it
exactly for what it was.
Well, that's the sense you get watching it, is that they were very tolerant and accepting of happy accidents as long as they were funny and they were within the guidelines of, you know, TV.
Why can't a show like the Carol Burnett show, or you had your own show, the Tim Conway show, why won't variety shows like that work anymore? Or do you feel like they would, but they're not doing them right, or what?
Well, I think it boils down to what the business has become. That people think if it isn't funny on the paper, how is it possibly going to be funny when you're doing it?
Right.
And they'll read it, and reading cold
I
never
say this all the time. You're right.
Has
never
gotten a laugh.
You're right. I just wrote a pilot, and people are reading it, and they're like, you know, this scene's really funny, but maybe you could spruce it up. I go, it's in the acting. It's in the.
Right.
It's going to be funnier with the right actors doing the physical. You know, they don't get that. If they can't envision that,
right.
If it's not on the page, you're right. You're right. That's a very true thing about today.
Yeah.
It's very true. And I think that lends to, by the way, the shock value that you're talking about, how everything has to be shocking and over the top. I think a lot of people got desperate to be like, all right, they're not finding this stuff funny. I gotta shock them. I gotta make them think, oh my God, this is crazy. This is great. We gotta film it.
Well, yeah.
I don't know.
Some people think that that's basically, you know, like, that's what a lesser mind is doing to just express itself forcefully, to add that element. But I think with respect to a lot of sketch and variety shows, I'll use an example. It's this show. It comes on Saturday nights, and it's not taped. It's actually done live, a live Saturday night show. And you see costumes that are lavish, and they have people doing celebrity impersonations, which can be funny, but that's kind of a lot of what they do, and decor that looks really, you know, like an actual office would look, and they're concerned about all these things that don't really make a sketch any funnier.
The
production, you know?
Yeah. What color should this wall be?
Right.
Well, I don't know. What's the funniest color you got so far? No, that's true. And they don't trust, you're right, the people, the performers, to make it funny.
See, now I felt like when you were on Yes, Dear, I felt like whoever was in charge of that show at the time, they've got it. They got it, because they kind of let you guys just do your thing.
Yeah.
And would you say that atmosphere was very much comfortable for you, though?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
See, I'm trying to think of a show that's like Yes, Dear today, and I can't, like, maybe Modern Family. I don't know, maybe Modern Family.
Is it?
Like,
you think?
I'm trying to think of the comedy styling, and but really, no. I actually really liked Yes, Dear. I remember when the critics ravaged it.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a good show. I actually really enjoy it. I think Michael O'Malley, by the way, is a really underrated talent.
Oh, yeah.
I think Michael O'Malley's fantastic.
Yes, he
is. When you were working on that show, I'm trying to remember, didn't you have an episode with Jerry Van Dyke? You had one with Jerry, didn't you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think I remember it. Were you in was that the baseball episode with the baseball players, or is that Jerry Van Dyke
with
episode?
The kids?
Yeah, with kids?
I believe it was.
Yeah. I thought you were great on that show. I mean, I've loved your work forever. And by the way, let's promote the book again. What's So Funny? My Hilarious Life by Tim Conway. It's in Amazon right now. You can pre-order it October 29th. It'll come to your door. It's going to be in bookstores as well. Can I go to a Barnes & Noble and get it? All right, you can go to Barnes.
If you can find one. Delivering it.
You'll be delivering it?
Yeah. It's kind of like the morning paper, you know. Yeah, no, it'll be in Barnes and somebody's.
So,
or it'll be in Barnes. Just Barnes. A guy named Barnes.
So, how do you and, like, any of the old friends of yours from doing these shows ever get together and hang out? Like Dick Van Dyke, Carol Burnett. Do you guys get together?
Carol and I do from the old shows.
Oh, that's great.
But Mike Connors and I, he's kind of a regular on Tuesday nights, and Newhart. And,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I
saw you're involved in something that when I saw the cast is kind of catching my eye a little bit. If you talk about Big Finish with Newhart, and I'm seeing Mary Tyler Moore, Debbie Reynolds, Garrett Morris.
Oh.
This is kind of interesting. Will you talk a little bit about that?
I didn't know I was on that show, but by golly, I'll be looking forward to that one. Yeah.
A movie.
Because those are pretty funny people.
I would pay good money to be in a room with Tim Conway and Bob Newhart.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really, really.
Oh, he makes...
I have at least $20 in my pocket right now. That's my dinner money. Your wife's trying to rob me of my lunch money. She is a school bully.
He makes me laugh.
I love Bob. Bob Newhart, growing up for me, was one of my LCs. Chicago guy.
Yeah.
And Bob, I even his dramatic stuff. I remember I've talked about this on the show before. He did a recurring spot on ER.
He's really good.
He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal. And he finally won an Emmy this year, which, by the way, he should have won 50 of them by now. He won one for guest starring on The Big Bang Theory. But this is a guy that should have 50 Emmys by now.
Absolutely.
That's a great room right there, you and Bob Newhart. And Carol Burnett's amazing. I mean, Mike Connors, that's great. What? Oh, and Rickles?
You're going to
hang out with Rickles.
Oh, yeah.
That potty mouth.
I hear he's a very sweet man, though. Person.
How much do you like Don? Don's a good time.
Is he?
Oh,
okay.
The best. Yeah.
So when Don's busting your chops in front of people, and then he pulls you aside in the room, gives you a big hug, and goes, "I love you, Tim."
Yeah.
Is that what? Is that how? Is
well,
that how
I
Don
don't know
is?
Why he hasn't been killed.
You know, neither do a lot of people.
The stuff he does and the stuff he says to people, you're bound to run across the guy who is quick-tempered and go smack, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he's avoided it so far.
I got to tell you, and this is the truth. I don't care. This is how much I would not care about being in Hollywood. To hang out in a room with Tim, Don Rickles, Bob Newhart, Carol Burnett, I'd retire a happy man.
I could
never do anything. I don't care anymore at that point. Like, I don't care about meeting George Clooney. Brad Pitt. Like, this is a big deal for me, having you on.
Yeah.
And, like, guys like Don Rickles and, like, you know, I grew up with the Dean Martin roast and, you know, this is where I, you know, when I was growing up, my parents would send me to my grandparents all the time to be watched. And my grandparents, they would have all the Dean Martin roasts laying around. That's what I watched.
Yeah.
That was TV for me. And Jerry Lewis's marathons.
I listened to comedy albums. I had the Bob Newhart, the Button Down Mine. And Hello Dummy by Don Rickles.
Oh,
I had Our Hero, Pat Cooper.
Oh.
I had the early George Carlins. I had Bill Cosby. I had Robert Klein, Child of the 50s.
Yep, love
all
Robert
those,
Klein.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. You got a great group of friends.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Thank
you seem to have a great life. You should be very happy.
I have no idea how I got here or the value of it, but no, it's true.
I mean, this should tell people to run out and buy the book and or order it on your computer now and buy the book, because you're on your computer if you're listening to the show or you're on your phone. But go to Amazon, buy the book, because I'm imagining all your friends are in the book. This is going to be a great book. I wish I had to read right now.
Well, my wife was Carol Burnett's secretary for some years.
Really?
Yeah, huh. way back in New York when she was working with Gary Moore. Came out to here when she did her show out here. So she's been a terrific influence on my life. Oh. And, you know.
That's great.
She gets up in the morning and makes toast.
You know, she introduced herself as Mrs. Conway?
Really?
That's the nicest thing I ever heard.
That's so sweet.
You guys are a great couple.
She brought us orange slices, actually.
I want to ask you a question about that. I've been writing a lot lately about love and stuff in this blog I do. How do you guys keep it strong? Like, first of all, how'd you guys fall in love? And how so many years have you been together?
Well, first of all, I keep it strong by dating.
Yeah. Do you guys still go out? You do the dates and everything?
Well, not with her.
Oh.
Are you crazy?
With Rickles and Newhart.
Yeah, right. Carol.
I think the friends we have and the people we surround ourselves with have pretty much what we have in mind about what is a good life. And
that's great. So you surround yourself with the people. Like, it is the people you surround. You are who you hang out with. You are who your friends are.
Right.
That theory is very true to you.
Yeah,
right.
That's great. So in your mind, even to your values and morals when it comes to love, it was all about the kind of values and morals that were around you everywhere else in life.
Right.
And that's something very important, don't you think?
Absolutely. Obviously, my wife was not looking for looks when she got married.
Aww.
So I filled that slot very nicely. You've hit the nail on the head. It's surround yourself with people that think the way you do and that you would like to
it
be.
It seems
with.
Hard to find that nowadays.
It does. Yeah, it really does.
It really seems hard to find anyone nowadays.
Especially if you live in Los Angeles and you're not from Los Angeles.
Right.
It can be very difficult.
It's very difficult to meet people nowadays. So I'm very happy you two are together and you're so happy. That's so great.
We're together.
And of course, I do want to mention, so everyone knows, your son, he's still on the radio, right?
Yes.
He's still got the radio show on. What station is it? KIX or
KFI? Yeah.
One of those three letters.
KIX, named after the cereal.
Tim Conway Jr., of course.
Right.
And he's a disc jockey and been so for how many years now?
12.
12? Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, it feels like 15, 20. So Rick Dees is moving out. Tim Conway Jr.
Okay.
is moving
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
I'll tell Ray.
How proud of you were your son that your son followed like completely in your footsteps?
Oh, I have to say that he did it all on his own.
Yeah,
I mean, I encouraged him.
Did he go to school for radio like you did?
Well, I took him out of school in the second grade. And
really?
No.
Oh, I was going to believe you.
Took him to a radio station.
I would have believed you because I've heard Tim's show. No, I'm just...
No, he used to go to shows. You know, I have six kids, so I don't know what I was going to say, but I know it was important, and it was lengthy.
We were talking about how Tim got in the business of radio.
Yeah,
Did he go to school? He didn't go to school for it, though?
No.
He did.
Oh, who cares?
He did. Your wife is saying yes.
Yeah. Oh, Columbia School of...
Broadcasting.
Oh, okay. Okay, great.
CBC.
Wow, that's great. Good for him. I'm very happy to hear he's doing well with the radio thing. That's great.
I'm kind of tired of hearing about his success.
Yeah. Hey, listen. Listen, I would pay good money to work in radio. I'd pay good money just to work right now.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Just to work at the moment would be nice.
Does someone mow your lawn already? Because he's kind of...
Yeah, I can cook grits. Hey, let me ask you about Married with Children.
Yes.
Because you did a bunch of episodes of Married with Children.
Yeah.
Now, how does that... Like, does that cross the line, like, content-wise for you at all?
It's a great, well-written show.
It was, the ones I did were early on.
Yes.
So they didn't wander too much.
That's before they started getting risky business over
there. Yeah, right.
I loved Married with Children, though. I thought that was a very, very good show.
Yeah, the writing was good.
You were very funny on it. And you and Ed O'Neill, I mean, that's a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
He's a great guy, isn't he?
Oh, he's a great actor, too.
Great actor. Also from Ohio.
Yes.
Also an Ohio guy. I believe he's Toledo. I think that's right.
I believe so, yes.
He played football there, too, I believe.
Yeah, Polk High. Yeah. Three touchdowns in one game.
He really did play college football. Like, I don't think Ed O'Neill was ever planning on being an actor. I think it kind of just happened.
It was one of those things
that just happened, and he's great. He is phenomenal. And everything he touches makes him $1 billion, I'm pretty sure. Because he owns a part of Modern Family.
Yeah,
so
right.
He's worth like $1 trillion now. Diagnosis Murder, of course, you did with Dick Van Dyke,
Dick,
of course.
Yes.
Is Dick going to be doing any more TV or film that you know of?
I think, he's like...
Is he doing okay
so
after
people.
His accident?
Oh, yeah.
He's
oh,
doing
yeah.
okay?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, he was going to sit in the car and watch it burn, but he said, I better get out of here. Yeah, he's doing very well, and thank goodness nothing happened to him in that accident, but... Yeah, he's fine.
That's great. Is there any projects coming up in the future for you right now? Anything you got going on?
I try to squelch those as soon as I hear about them, especially if it's 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You like doing the guest spot thing right now. You
much
like
better.
That.
Well, much better.
You get a lot of voiceover gigs, too.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
SpongeBob.
Yeah, SpongeBob. Yeah.
SpongeBob. You and Ernest Borgnine, right?
Yes.
And then you and Don Knotts had your show for a while that you guys did. And, of course, Don was a big loss. That was in 2006.
Yeah.
What a great actor he was.
Oh.
How close were you and Don Knotts?
Very.
That's the one I figured you guys were, like, best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured you and Don were close. He was an amazing, amazing actor.
I'll tell you a story. We were in doing a film up north and near, outside of San Francisco. But it's... kind of was in cowboy country, and cowboys hate performers, you know. So Don Knotts and I were up there working on this show, and it was a Western type thing, and so we had one scene where we were supposed to be working as chorus girls on a show in a bar in the old West. So Don was dressed as a woman. I was not because I said Don is a much funnier woman than I am. So he had this red hair on and the dress and everything. And so he said, you know, those dressing rooms are so cold in the morning. He said, I'm freezing when I get dressed. So I said, well, why don't you have the wardrobe guy bring you the clothes, get dressed in the motel, and then, you know, you can be warm in your room. He said, yeah, that's a great idea. So a wardrobe guy brings the clothes. So now he's going to work with me in this dress and this red hair and everything. So I would pull up alongside the car and go, beep, 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 you know, hey, what do you think? They go, jeez, oh, God, you know. So... one night we came home and he said, "You know, I'm gonna go change and then I'll come over and meet you for a beer across the street in the bar." So okay, so I let him off at the motel. Now he had forgotten his key to the room, so I'm in the motel with these cowboys who, you know, are just looking for a reason to punch me. So I'm sitting there drinking a beer. And in comes Don in drag with the dress, the whole thing, the wig, the whole thing. So he comes over to me and he said, Tim, you got the key to that room? And I said, the key? I said, you know, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I said, why don't we talk about price first? And he said, Tim, don't screw around here. So fortunately, they didn't.
I love how you weren't even embarrassed in front of the Cowboys. You made
smart
aleck remark.
That's funny.
What about Steve Lawrence? You guys are good friends as well.
Steve and Edie, yeah. Well, we were.
Yeah.
Terrible loss.
Yeah, what do you remember the most about, like, your friendship?
He was with Steve Allen, too. You know, they got their start on Steve Allen, Steve and Edie. So they have been very good friends. Steve is a funny guy. He does a little bit in when they were entertaining in nightclubs, comedy and stuff like that. So he's not and a great singer.
Yeah,
you know. So yeah, we see him quite often now.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
By the way, I was saying, what's Tim done lately? Hot in Cleveland, you were just on, of course.
Uh-huh.
Valerie Bertinelli. I remember I introduced my mom to Valerie Bertinelli. It was like the greatest day of her life.
She flipped.
And she loved it. And Florence Henderson and Lanny Kazan. And oh, yeah, my mom loves those. And then I was just going to say, I was thinking myself, oh, wouldn't it be great to see a reunion of some sort?
Uh-huh.
Well, for all those people at home that are wondering, Pat Tobias sent me. This is why Pat's so great. On October 20th, Carol Burnett's going to be honored with the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And Tim and Vicki Lawrence and Tina Fey and Julie Andrews and Tony Bennett, and they're all going to be there. And it's going to air in November around Thanksgiving on PBS.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, so that's great. Tim's just finding out about this now. Tim's I have things to do.
He's got hosting duty.
Well, there's a job.
And you just did an episode of Major Crimes with
yes.
what a great group of characters on that
aren't
episode, right?
Yeah.
So you're still getting out there and doing the work.
Yes.
You could retire. You're just like you like getting out every once in a while.
Yeah, I like annoying people.
Yeah. Coming into their living room.
Yeah, right.
Well,
do you audition for any of these things, or do you? I mean,
no.
Most of these gigs, not anymore. I imagine they just say they call you. They want Tim. I mean,
I was fortunate. I never auditioned
for like Apple
anything.
Dumpling Gang or
no.
any of that. They just
no.
would want.
Yeah.
They wanted you.
Yeah, there weren't bright people working in the industry at that time, so they just said,
there are now, though.
Well, with Apple Dumpling Gang, they were probably like, who would take themselves so barely seriously here?
Yeah, right.
who does not mind being the butt of this joke?
Yeah.
The Apple Dumpling Gang, grew up loving those movies,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Well, one more time. Let me promote the book one more time. I've had you for your hour here. What's So Funny, My Hilarious Life, comes out October 29th. You can go to Amazon now and order it. It'll be in bookstores everywhere as well. Tim Conway, you were great. I'm
great.
so happy you came by.
This was a real treat.
No question. I was so surprised. I just stopped in here to eat, and here you guys are.
Here at Taste Chicago, 603
on the radio.
North Hollywood Way, yeah. here in Burbank, California, the 10th year anniversary. Coming up the weekend of October 11th, you can come in and get a free gift giveaway. Josephine was not specific what's in that free gift giveaway, but it sounds great. And then, of course, on Living Social, you're going to be able to pay for one of those. You put in $20 and you get $30. I don't know what it's going to be, but they'll have one of those coupons that you get for food here at Taste Chicago. So they're going to be celebrating the 10th year in style here. Thank you to Arlene and Joe Montagna, as always.
This is the fourth best podcast that you will do at a pizza at a pizzeria this week.
Thank you, Tim, for proving to me that I need to be in the business at a different time, because it's no good anymore. It's no good anymore.
Come on over to the house and we'll hang around together.
I would love that.
I got some lawns.
Invite your buddies.
Yeah.
I would just hang out with you. I don't even want to be in this business anymore. I'm done.
There will be cold cuts.
I bet you we're good.
Cold cuts involved. Invite Johnny Winters.
Anything you got to plug?
Mm.
Oh, Jonathan Winters, what a bad loss that was.
Yeah.
Anything?
Yeah, next week I'll be at the Stage in Burbank on San Fernando on Tuesday, shows at 7.
Very good, yeah. Very good. Tuesday show at 7.
Lee Capreas, hello, by the way. I didn't even introduce myself at the top of the show.
Oh, that's right.
No.
Well, that's your bad.
I know.
and we will be back next Wednesday. Tim Conway, thank you so much for joining us once again. The book is going to be out on October 29th, What's So Funny, My Hilarious Life by Tim Conway. Thank you so, so much. And thank you, Mrs. Conway, for coming by as well. Thank you.
Oh, Mrs. Conway, how are you?
Yes.
Nice to see you.
Thank you. And we will see you next week. Okay.